Wednesday, it's 1 o'clock. It's time for the Indie Media Radio London show, brought to you on Resonance FM 104.4. Bringing stories direct from the streets, posted onto the indiemedia.org.uk newswire and indie media sites worldwide. We look forward to presenting your stories, so keep posting them to indiemedia.org.uk.
Good afternoon, it's the Indie Media London Newswire show. It's Wednesday the 14th of June 2006 and we've got a packed show for you today with a bit of an Irish feel. We're starting off with a story from Rossport, where they've just had the first anniversary solidarity camp with the action there against Shell. We've got a telephone interview with Penny in Palestine and some audio material about the situation there. And we've got lots of stories and announcements for you as usual. So let's just go straight to the struggle against Shell's plans to build a gas pipeline in the west of Ireland, which continues. Last weekend, activists held a solidarity camp over the holiday weekend in Rossport with speakers, music and tours of sites such as Carrowmore Lake, already polluted by Shell, as well as joining the picket at the proposed site, which has now been continuously in place for more than a year. Here, an Indie Media Ireland reporter, Dunk, talks to Teresa Ní Gearé, a local woman, as well as exercising his Celtic charm on the camp's kitchen crew.
Okay, so we're just sitting up here in one of the tents in Rossport on the beach, or pulling
a Thomas.
But we're just after watching the Bolivia Not For Sale film, and Jose, one of the people who's come over from Bolivia, explained after the film about what went on, the struggles that were going on over there, the situations. We saw deaths of people in a story that seems to be quite similar to what's going on here. Multinationals coming in and taking resources of area and not caring about local community, even if that means people are dying. So just, I'm here with someone who's from the Rossport area, so maybe if you could just give us your feedback about what you thought about the film.
Well, I saw a lot of comparisons between our area here and Bolivia. When our campaign started out here, it started out with a handful of people, you could say, and as the word spread, then more people became involved. It's the same story basically of a rural area with the falling population, you know, which has its own struggles to overcome, and then the multinational moving in to take advantage of the low population base, of maybe the low level of employment, and feeding on that then to try and sell their project. Now, of course, health and safety, they don't focus in on the health and safety, which in most cases is the most important issue for rural communities. And when I was just looking at that clip there, I saw an awful lot of similarities between our campaign and the campaign in Bolivia.
Yeah, and like the, just seeing how you know, it took people organising themselves, organising the communities, and over in Bolivia with such lack of resource, but yet they came together and they established contacts, and they, I suppose it was a do or die situation. They said, we either sit back and, you know, we don't have the money to pay for the water, as was in the case there, and we simply die, or else we have to take to the streets and try to overcome this unfair system.
Yeah, well, again, it goes back because the multinationals, as you know, they have unlimited resources, really, on their side, whereas a lot of communities, they have very limited resources. But what happens is people make full use of the resources they have. They use them. And the best resource of all that communities have is their people. Mm. And no one knows the area better, or no one has a more intimate knowledge of the area than the local people who live in the area. And I think in our case here, this information has stood us well. In the case of our the project here, the Carb Gas project, it traverses an area of Montclair, and it's proposed to traverse 8 kilometres of bogland as far as a refinery site, and this goes through Blanket Bog. Now, it's very clear, this became very clear through the planning process, through the oral hearings, that really, Shell or Statoil, they have no concept of what it is to develop a project in bog. We have lived with blanket bog all our lives, so we have a much greater understanding of what's involved. And that local knowledge really has stood us well.
I was going to ask about the level of understanding that you think the people of the island of the island have, especially the youth of the island. First of all, do people know the facts of what's going on? And second of all, are they bothered? Do they care about it? Because I think one aspect, and for me it's an unhealthy aspect of this Celtic Tiger, is that I think there's a large amount of apathy, you know, because people do have it easier. And yeah. You know. But would you agree that there's that apathy out there? And also, is that starting to change? Do you see any sort of shifts?
There's truth in what you say there, because if people have, for instance, I suppose it actually comes down to the individual. What's important to you? Is it materialistic wealth, or is it the environment, your health and your safety? But if people have something to hand, well, when they don't have to fight for it, I suppose in one sense it can become less valuable to them. If you have to fight for something, well, it becomes much more valuable. Now, here, even in our own area now, there are a lot of people who, for one reason or another, they're just standing back. They're not being proactive. They're not doing anything at all about the situation. And then it comes down to a core of people then who are genuinely worried, who have concerns about their health and safety, about the environment. And what's keeping us all going is, when we were growing up, we inherited an environment that was free of pollution. Yeah. We grew up in a very healthy environment. Now, the onus is on us as individuals to pass that on to the next generation coming up.
Yeah.
But I suppose each individual has to take their own viewpoint on this. There are certainly a lot of people who are prepared just to stand in the background and not play any part at all. But you can only inform them. The decision rests with them at the end of the day, yeah. You know.
And could you say a little bit about the mainstream media? And like when you said earlier on, you're saying you'd read something in the paper and just take it at face value. Have you learned a lot about like certain workings of the media? And like, would you be more sceptical now?
Yeah, well, we have. I suppose initially starting out, it was very hard for us to get any coverage in any media, and because they didn't seem to take any interest in the story at all. And then as time went on, but particularly since the five men were imprisoned in Clover Hill, the media then caught on in a big way. But having said that, you may give an interview to a journalist in good faith, but what the idea that you were trying to get across may not be what transfers onto the written page.
Yeah.
You know,
so editing.
Yes, the editing change, it might change the whole context of what you've said. So we have, I suppose, we've become more savvy in that regard as well. But
then also with that,
you have to publicise. Yeah.
But then also using the alternative media, like and using your own media, becoming
absolutely,
the media,
our own website, and putting out our story.
Yeah. Which really is the power.
Which is yes. But we have certainly, we have become more careful, I suppose, in how we deal with the media.
Yeah. Okay. Just to finish off, and we'll a couple of focal got line are. Harica agus Trathorca in Bolivia agus Nachnella temple on down.
Well, just Quinisus in Iraq agus Lecunoje Chucky Taro to Chucky and Taro Kiartas in Iraq.
Agus for the people now who know Gaelga, and even myself, I don't understand all that. Could you just give us that in English as well, please?
Well, just keep up the effort. Basta is the word, the Bolivian word for enough. So I think Basta should become all of our mottos. And just keep up the effort, and unity really is power, and hopefully we will succeed.
What do the Rossport people feel about, you know, these outsiders who are coming in to help, you know, to try to do, offer what they can, resources or anything that possible, help blockade, whatever. How are these outsiders viewed by the Rossport community?
Well, I suppose we can only speak for our own group. We're absolutely delighted with the group that have come to join us in our campaign. As you say, they will be spending their, this will be the first year now. This weekend is the first anniversary. And we look upon them as being like-minded people to ourselves. They have the same values as we have. So, and they're doing Trojan work, you know. We're a fairly small group, really, and it has helped us to move the process forward, because there's only so much you can do.
Exactly.
you know. And if you spread the workload out among a bigger group of people, well, you can get an awful lot more done.
Yeah.
So we're absolutely very grateful to the group for joining with us in this campaign. And they bring with them an awful lot of knowledge.
Yeah.
Because they've been involved maybe in other campaigns. In my own instance, this would be the first campaign that I would have been involved in.
Yeah.
So it's new territory for me. But it has opened my eyes, and it gives you a completely different outlook. You know, before now, if I read an Nation article in the paper, I would have taken it at face value. Whereas now, I question everything.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I take nothing for granted. So it's been an education in itself,
yeah.
And for the better, you know.
And I think even that, like the fact even as you heard the people speaking after the film, there was, I'd say, probably four or five different nationalities, and they're just probably the ones that spoke. Like,
yeah.
It truly is an international solidarity project, you know. If there's, I'm sure there's, well, we all know there's been plenty of Irish people going abroad doing what they can, whether it was missionaries in Africa or whatever it was, or people just going out to help, whatever. But there has been a tradition here, and now it's lovely to see that there's people coming here from, whether it's, I don't know, Bolivia or anywhere,
everyone
know.
Is welcome, you know.
Exactly.
And it all strengthens the whole thing, as I say, each link strengthens the chain.
Yeah.
So we're delighted, and you know, long may it continue. And it certainly has given us a different outlook on, you know, on multinationals.
So it's around midday. We're sitting in one of the most beautiful places in the world. We've just had one of the most beautiful meals in the world. And we're sitting here chatting to two of the most beautiful women in the world. Can you tell us a little bit about this Bitchin' Kitchen Collective? It's a vegan collective, isn't it?
Yeah, all the food is vegan. Well, sometimes like we'd have options that are just vegetarian, but the food is always vegan, so everyone can eat the food, like so that we don't have to like turn everyone away and go, no, you can't have that. So it's just it's available to everybody.
There's always special people that want special food as well.
Yeah.
We cater for all those special people.
And what about, because a lot of, well, not a lot, but I suppose some people who, you know, they might arrive at some sort of gathering or something, and they mightn't really be used to the whole vegetarian or vegan kind of diet, and they kind of, you know, expect just you know, where's my meat, and they wouldn't be able to deal with it. But then they get these meals and they're just blown away by the flavours and how full up they feel. And
yeah, that's happened to so many times. Like, we were cooking at a gathering in Donegal, and it was just all kind of regular people coming from the town who wouldn't have eaten food like that before, and just literally the smells as we were cooking, they were like, oh, what are you cooking, and then they taste it and they're amazed that it actually tastes decent and it fills them up. Like, we cooked veggie burgers at a sustainable fair last week or 2 weeks ago, and people were coming up to us saying, I'm not even a vegetarian and they're the nicest burgers I've ever. So it's brilliant just to show people that vegan and vegetarian and organic and strange foods aren't like weird or disgusting. They can be really nice and really tasty.
Yeah. Overall, your year and a half, is it year and a half?
Year.
Yeah. Only a year. The year. But of the Bitchin' Kitchen.
About year and a half.
Okay.
The Bitchin' Kitchen.
So, of all the Bitchin' Kitchen, the history of the Bitchin' Kitchen, can you just, has there been a few really memorable feasts that you've had? Or
I'm
a big fan of Asterix books, and the way everyone ends with the feast at the end, you know, to celebrate. That's what communities are about.
Yeah. Well, when we cooked the Eye for Winter Meat, I think that was one of our best ones, because for once we were like indoors and we had a really fancy kitchen, and we just went over the top like with meals. They're like the most amazing vegan pizzas and lasagnas and millions of salads and like just going over the top. So I don't know, maybe we'll end with a big feast.
So could there possibly be a Bitchin' Kitchen recipe book coming out soon?
Great.
Maybe.
All right.
Lovely. Well, listen, thanks very much. The food is just amazing as ever. So I'm sure, who knows, the rest of the world, I'd say, only dying to have you come over. And so.
Thanks a million.
Well, if you haven't had your lunch yet, that will have set your tummy rumbling. For more about the campaign called Shell to Sea, see their website. That's www.corrib, that's corribsos.com, corribsos.com. And for more about the Bolivia Is Not For Sale film, see www.boliviasc.org.uk. Of course, that stands for Bolivia Solidarity Campaign.